Good morning. Last day of Mac, first day of the session, first session of today. See, like already twisted my words. If the presentation is going to continue to be quite rocky, I have an excuse for that because I spend like all the time finding the matching shoes to these beautiful blue bags that we all got as part of the conference. Let me give you an overview of what we're going to go and talk about this morning. There's a whole bunch of announcements we're actually making. There's two announcements we're making regarding the product, and then you will all have the privilege to see get a first glance at Outlook 16. Ronnie's going to go and do a quick demo of something that we've done in Outlook 16. Other than that, we're going to go and give you an overview of our priorities. We're going to walk you through some best practices for how you guys can run Outlook in your organization. And we're going to have a whole bunch of demos throughout the entire presentation. And I propose that we do the Q&A at the end. So you can come to the mic, and then we're happy. Like, there's actually a whole bunch of Outlook folks in the first row that are happy to answer questions. With that, let me start introducing myself. It's actually my second time to be in Texas for a couple of days. The first time was another Mac conference. Some of you might have been there in Dallas. Some of you been at the Dallas, Texas Mac conference? Well, you may remember me. I was the guy speaking with a strong German accent because I was qualified with my strong German accent to talk about globalization of Outlook. So I was conducting that session, it was probably about a decade ago. I tried to look it up. I couldn't really find the exact date. I have worked on Outlook for about a decade, and then I did a bunch of other stuff for 5 years. Most recently, I worked with one of my colleagues who's also here in the audience, Rafiq, on SharePoint Online. We made SharePoint ready for Office 365, and then I came back to Outlook. And we're actually applying a ton of lessons that we've learned running a service to the client. And I think that's sort of the theme of the presentation, is really that we are moving at a much faster pace. We are innovating faster, and we want to actually start the discussion with you guys about how Outlook in your organization can also be a client that that users get the benefit of innovation at a much faster pace than what we are used to from sort of the office machinery, providing software every 2-3 years in a shrink wrap box form. We have really changed a lot. We're at a time when the industry is changing a lot, and we at Microsoft are part of that. We're part of that industry, and there's a lot of change happening right now in Redmond. I'm going to go and give you a sort of a glance behind the scenes how we engineer adopting these new engineering practices. With that, I want to start with a gentle telemetry exercise here in the room. Actually, just so we understand a little bit about who runs which version of Outlook, please raise your hand if you are in an organization where you have desktop Outlook deployed. And that's pretty much all of you. And please keep the hand up. I want to go and understand something else. And please raise your other hand if you're also running 2013 already in your organization. Wow, that is really, really great. Yeah, I'm glad to see that. So please, another round of exercise, and then you can go and rest your hands again. So the other round of exercise is, like, how many of you in your organization have enabled your workforce to use phones or tablets to catch up on email while you're on the go? That's a lot of you. And how many of you are having folks in your organization that use rely on OWA when they're on the go? Outlook Web Access. Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot. So let me start with Outlook priorities. We have three top priorities, and all our investments are parented to one of these three buckets. The first one, and that's the most important one, and that's actually the one that we spent the most time on in the last year, is to be a first-class service client. And that means foremost a first-class Office 365 client. I will talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. The second one is fit for new generation of devices. And the third one is to provide you, I assume that a lot of you are actually representing enterprises here in these organizations or our partners, provide you with a lot of advanced enterprise differentiation, enterprise value, like new features that are helping. DLP is a good example of a feature that we introduced in the last release cycle. So let me spend a minute on why first-class service client is important for Outlook. When we introduced Outlook, and some of you may remember, like it was in the 90s, and the environment was very different. Like often, Outlook would run on a desktop computer, maybe on a laptop computer, over your corporate LAN connected to your Exchange server. Like that LAN had typically very high bandwidth and very low latency, and you were probably deploying online mode of Outlook. And once in a while, when there was some hiccup, you would get like a dialogue in Outlook, cancelable RPC or something like that that the user didn't really like. But most of the time, the world was fine. Like that has completely, radically changed. Regardless if you have your mailbox in the cloud or even on-prem, you all know that there's a ton of scenarios of where these computers are more mobile and they're not connected over your corporate network to that mailbox. They're connected over the internet to that mailbox. And the internet is the wild, wild west. The internet can have very high latencies. The internet can have low bandwidth. And the hardest stress test for Outlook is actually the connection, the connector. We call it the connector ride. The connector, what that is Microsoft offers to all employees a shuttle bus to commute back and to work. And that shuttle bus has a 4G Wi-Fi connection in it that is shared with everybody. And depending on where the bus is, it may have okay connection, it may have pretty poor connection. And the hardest stress test for Outlook in that context is actually, at times, network packets just get dropped. So we go and ask Exchange for some data, and we never receive any data. So we have to wait for a timeout, and that can cause Outlook to hang. So like the network context in itself, and also the fact that you're authenticating over a public link really changed the demands for Outlook. So we've done a ton of work, and a lot of this session is about giving you an introduction of the work that we've done in that area. And there's actually a bunch more deep dives there. Fit for new generation of devices. I mean, you all probably already have one, and you got one the first day of the conference. This one is a Lenovo, but it's very similar to the Dell Venue that you got. They have a lot of different attributes, as you all know here in the room. They are small. They're like this one has an 8-inch screen. I have used actually this device, not this literally device, but the same one, the Lenovo, on my trip to Switzerland, as you can hear from my accent. I'm from Switzerland. I went skiing in February in Switzerland, and I took one of those into the plane in Seattle, and my expectation wasn't the device was actually fulfilling that expectation, that I can catch up on email. A lot of planes now have a way that you can plug in your USB. My plane didn't have that. So I was expecting that I can come to the airport with a fully charged device, and I'm able to go and catch up on email. And the flight end-to-end to Switzerland is about 12 hours. I didn't read mail for 12 hours, but I did probably, like, I don't know, 6-8 hours, and I still have battery left on that device. What are other attributes? I mean, they have touch, clearly. They have high-resolution screens. Some of them, the newer generation, all the way up to 150-300 DPI screens. Some of the cheaper versions of these devices have very small hard drives, not a lot of memory. Small hard drives means that you probably don't want to cache your entire huge mailbox on these devices, so you actually want to go and give the user a lot of choice of like how much stuff they want to dedicate on this device to Outlook and how much other things they want to download. Like often these devices are also BYOD devices, devices that don't even belong to your organization, but they belong to the actual your employees. So they may want to go and download movies or download other stuff on that. And it's important that they have control over like how much disk space Outlook uses up on these devices. The third pillar is about enterprise differentiation. I will get to that a little bit later. I will skip that for now. So this introduces our theme of today, accelerating. So like I talked a little bit about sort of connectivity in the context of the service, but there's way more than just connectivity that comes with the service, and it's all about accelerating. We really are already in a world of where we deliver Outlook at a much faster pace than if you were just to look back, like simply a year. What we are actually doing, and I will get to that a little bit later, is but every single month when you get, and I assume a lot of you are using MSI installs, when you get a new P or Microsoft releases a new public update, on Microsoft update or a new cumulative update, there's a better version of Outlook in it. I want to stress that is like it is a reality that every single month we're actually shipping a version of Outlook that is better than the previous one. And there's a whole bunch of classes of issues that we're addressing every single month. And there's a huge advantage for you to consider making sure that these updates are actually available to your users within your organizations as quickly as possible. Another aspect of it is that we clearly want to shrink the delta from coming up with an idea and users having the feature, the scenario in their hands. Like typically previously is like, you know, the Office release cycles, 2 to 3 years, Office 2010, Office 2013, and all of that. These times are behind us. We will continue to ship shrink-wrapped Office software. You can continue to go to Best Buy and you can go and buy them. But we are now in a world where we are working very hard to have a much faster cadence. And we really want to make sure that from the conception of the idea to prototyping that we're doing, from writing the specification, from having an initial crowd validating the feature, to inviting some more people within Microsoft to validate the feature, to inviting you through the technical preview program, to offering the feature at first availability to a 1% of the audience, to eventually offer it to everybody, we want to shrink that time. And I intentionally spoke about these different rings. We call them rings of validation internally. Because one of the tricks that we can go and accelerate the cadence is that we are not blasting out new things to everybody at one shot. Because we want to go and make sure that we control how fast we go and deploy these bits. Because sometimes we don't get things right. And when you don't get things right, this is we want to go and listen to the signals, and we want to be able to respond to that. And we want to go and quickly roll forward or backwards. So at any point in time, is we want to make sure that we accelerate delivering innovation to you guys, but we want to go and not compromise under any circumstances the quality that we're delivering. That's why it's super important for us to go and control the initial audience and look at the feedback signals that we're getting and to go and open the gates only if these signals are green and we know that we actually got it right. And if they're not green, we stop, we look at the problem, we get to the root cause, we fix it, and then we open up the gates. And we do the same thing for bug fixes that are sort of behind the scenes. And or also big innovations, right? Like if we, like you heard a lot, the Exchange guys talk about some of the innovation that is happening around groups and enterprise social and search and cloud attachments and stuff like that. All these things, what we're doing is we're flighting them internally. We flight them off by default, even within Microsoft. So there's a targeted audience, maybe a 5% slice that gets benefit of these features. And once we sort of have confidence that that ring of validation, we exhausted all the feedback we can, we start opening up the gates. There's a lot of examples, and we will get to that a little bit later. I was mentioning is like we can only do that through telemetry. And with telemetry, I mean that in a very broad sense. We listen to the feedback that we can capture from you guys in any way or form. It can be the traditional escalation channels that something got wrong, and you can call us, and it gets escalated up through support. But we also look on Twitter, we look in our forums, we look at our crashes, we look at actual telemetry data that we get back. So we just holistically watch what's happening with the client. And if we can catch any signals that are critical, then we immediately kick off an investigation to get to the root cause of that. And I think I already mentioned flighting and targeting. With flighting, it means that we always have A versus B. And A versus B means we're not doing it for literally everything, but for a lot of features we're doing it. A is typically the baseline, and B is the new feature we're doing, and then we can compare telemetry with both of them. So we have a baseline, this is the feature as we've shipped it, it has known behavior, known usage patterns, and then we introduce the feature B, and then we can compare that against its baseline. And targeting means that we actually have the capabilities that we can go and target individual tenants, for example. So if you are part of the technical preview, we can go and target you, and we can go and turn that feature on just for your tenant. Potentially, we can even target users within a tenant. This functionality is still in a work in progress. We're not having all of that in place. We have a lot of flighting and targeting capabilities within Microsoft right now. We're working with other Office teams right now to enable that in a broad sense, that we can go and do that with all the customers that we have. So with that, I would actually like to introduce you to Ronak. He's also in the Outlook PM team.
Here, come up.
And he will give you a first, walk you through a first demo. The goal of this demo is to introduce you to a feature that we were working on last year. And the goal of the demo is to show you how we adopted a different way to develop software and to ship it to you. And keep in mind that's like this feature and a lot of other things are all things that we've done to Outlook 2013, added to Outlook 2013 after we actually shipped the product.
Ronak? Thank you, Peter. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce myself. I'm Ronak Trivedi, Program Manager on Desktop Outlook. I started working with the team called People-Centric Experiences and then moved over to Desktop Outlook recently. And yeah, I'm here to show you some demos, so I hope you guys enjoy it. Let me just actually jump right into it. So like Peter was saying, Outlook is actually accelerating. And shortly after we shipped Outlook 2013, we started hearing whispers through our feedback channels that the email message header was actually too big. Let me go ahead and switch over. And so you can see here, we have an email message. The email message header that we're calling is on the right-hand side above the content. And it's starting to get a little bloated, right? It's starting to take up, what, 40% almost of the available space. And we knew this was a problem. So our engineering teams took a step back and we realized, as these mobile devices and these small screen devices become more prevalent in the workplace, that this problem is only going to get worse. So we came back, we gathered all the feedback, and we said, okay, let's flex some of our muscles and, to underscore Peter's point, see how we can go from problem to solution faster than we could previously. So here we have an email that has a bunch of people on the to line and the CC line. And at a glance, I might look at this email and say, oh, this is great. Someone's asking me about a bunch of different designs that we want to test in flight and get usage data on. But I want to kind of highlight at the bottom of this email, I see, oh, we're actually going to be reviewing this team, these designs with all the partner teams and directors. So this seems like it's a little piece of content that I need to know. And at a glance, I would miss it. So we decided that we would introduce what we're calling internally and externally, actually, the compact header. And so I'm going to go ahead and click this button right here. You can see me hovering over it, and boom. Just like that, we have what we're calling the compact message header. And in some extreme cases, it's almost 70% smaller. And this is something that we think you can live in. Here, I'll show you a few cool things about this. So we have the plus 55. You can click it, and you get a nice list of a rich preview of all the recipients differentiated by the to and the CC line. And go ahead and click it and open the person card. And you'll notice that as you read through different emails, that the message header persists. So we're so confident in this design that we think you'll actually live in this state. And the thing to highlight is right away at a glance, I now see kind of the most important or the whole message and don't lose the important parts. So let's take a step back and see how we got here. Well, we started from the problem and we said, let's mobilize all our engineering teams and use our processes to move quickly. So we designed a bunch of different versions. As you can see, here's five of probably 100 different designs that we did. We gathered usage data and telemetry data internally to make sure that we got it perfectly right, that we wouldn't be disrupting people's workflows. And only once the feedback loop was positive and the data came back and told us that what we did was correct, we went ahead and flipped the bid on for our consumers or for our customers. And now for Outlook 2013, the millions of customers get this new feature while the product is in the market and with the minimal amount of disruption. So there's a little bit of insight on a small little feature that we did, but we wanted to flex our muscles and see how fast we can go from problem to solution without causing disruption in people's workflows. And we hope to use this technique in the future with much bigger features to make sure that we get it exactly right before we go ahead and turn it on and flip the bits on for you guys. So with that, back to Peter.
Thank you, Ronak.
Yeah.
This slide has two announcements, so you're the first to see those two announcements. One of them is already here. So you might wonder is like some of you have who has heard about MapPHTP before? Yes. Okay, that's a lot of you. So you have probably wondered is like why are we introducing a new protocol? Didn't we have Outlook anywhere, MAPI over HTTP for quite a MAPI over RPC for quite a while? And the reason why we are introducing a new protocol is threefold. It gives us three advantages over RPC. Number one is like it's actually not even part of the three. But RPC is a protocol that has been introduced by Windows in the 90s, and it has been deprecated since. So like we are actually not innovating as a company in that protocol anymore. So the three advantages that we get out of MAPI over HTTP versus RPC are, number one, it's diagnosable. It's no longer opaque payloads, MAPI payloads that travel over RPC. It's actually MAPI ROPs that travel over HTTP, which is much, much easier to debug. And I can tell you, is like our engineers, and Bob can give you the, he's in our audience and give you the detailed story, but our engineers work sometimes many, many months to get to the root of these problems. And one of them was actually related to a connectivity problem between Outlook and Exchange, and there's a lot of networking gear in between Outlook and Exchange typically. You're aware of that. And it turned out to be it was some IIS setting, IIS server setting that was not set properly, that was shared between OWA and Outlook that had impact on the connection, right? And it took us many, many moons to get to the actual root of that. And it's super, super hard for our colleagues in Exchange or for us in the Outlook team to debug RPC-related issues. So number one benefit that this protocol gives us is debuggability. The second benefit we get out of that problem is actually extensibility, and I will get to that a little bit more. Because RPC is locked, right? So if you want to go and add new capabilities to it, then we can't really do that, because we would have to go to the Windows team, we would have to convince them to still do work despite the fact that the RPC protocol is deprecated. Big uphill battle, not very strategic for Microsoft, not that interesting. So that's the second benefit of it. And the third benefit is control. And control means is like we can actually go and invest in connectivity behavior the way that we wish to do so. So we can go and have a partnership with our colleagues in Exchange, and we can choose to go and innovate in certain aspects of the connectivity, and we can do that without having to go to another team and demand changes to a protocol. So so we've already shipped the MAPI over HTTP protocol in Service Pack 1. To underline a little bit the point that Ronak was making earlier, you have probably not noticed, and if you did, then we have messed up, that we introduced this protocol already in June. Like, in the June code of Outlook, it is actually there. It's in a sleeping manner. We turned it off by default, but we just wanted to make sure, because we had to touch a little bit of the shared connectivity code, that we do that in a non-disruptive manner. So this is the way that we do engineering. We started the work a little over a year ago. We did internal validation, and then we started including the code in Outlook 2013. And the first goal for us was actually not for you to validate the new protocol, but it was to validate that it doesn't cause any interference with the existing RPC work. So last June, we actually shipped the initial version. We, in Outlook, were already running the protocol internally together with our Exchange friends. But starting SP1, it's actually available, and it ships with the Outlook client. Exchange is right now working on and starting opening up the gates. Some tenancies will get the MAPI HTTP protocol turned on through auto discovery. So we're starting to go and reach out. We're already having a partnership with MemSIT. There's a lot of people within Microsoft that run this protocol. And so we're now just right now crossing out and start involving external companies. Everything that I say, and I think that's pretty much true to everything that Exchange says, is we do cloud first, on-premises later. Like, the goal is that when you can take advantage of this feature on-premises with your on-prem servers, at that point it has reached a level of maturity that you can trust that it already works. Like, we are using the cloud as a way to go and move fast and fix bugs, and then we give it to you so you can go and deploy it internally. So here's the announcement. Outlook 2010. You actually know about that before we have internally communicated in Microsoft. We just got a mail yesterday from one of our escalation engineers in Sweden. He said, like, customer asking for that. They really want it in Outlook 2010. Yes, we are porting it to Outlook 2010. We are not deprecating RPC, so you don't have to worry about that you have to go and immediately adopt the protocol, but hopefully this session, and there's a follow-up session, will show you what the benefits are of actually using the new protocol. So I really highly recommend that you come up with a plan within your organization to start deploying that new protocol. And we validated and engineered it using telemetry. We continue to work on connectivity overall. Our new protocol, MAPI over HTTP, gives us now the capabilities to diagnose these network-related issues with way more granularity than we had before. So we can go and look at the different failure cases if something doesn't go right. And stepping back, we actually have an internal KPI to measure how long it takes. When you take one of these machines, you wake it up, and you have your mail show up on that. And the competition, you already know, right? The competition is this. Right? Like these devices, you go and just type in your PIN, and you open your mail, and your mail is there. Right? You open your mail app, and your mail is already there. So we are fully aware that the bar is very, very high. And we're doing a ton of work that when you take your machine, you wake it up from hibernation in the morning, you type in your password, you open your Outlook, that your mail is there as quickly as possible. And the other thing I've already mentioned is resiliency to unreliable networks. There's a lot of work that we've already done and a lot of work that's still in the future to just make sure that the network cannot hang the Outlook UI thread. Like, that's really the goal that we have, is like, we want to go and have sync happening in the background, and if sync has hiccups, because the network has hiccups, that's okay. It just takes a little bit longer for your mail to get. But under no circumstances do we ever want your Outlook to hang, because the network is not in a healthy state. So here's the second announcement. About 1.5 years ago, we engaged with a lot of customers. And some of you may be involved in the banking industry. The banking industry has been the most vocal one in that regard. And I said, like, well, it's all great to move to the cloud, but we can't reuse our on-prem passwords to go and authenticate with mailboxes that are in the cloud. And this was a statement that was bigger than Outlook. It was just Outlook was the first scenario that they care. But it actually applies to all of Office, right? Like, if you go and connect with Word and you download a document that's on SharePoint, same thing is true. So we actually started a partnership with the Azure Active Directory team, that is a cross-organizational partnership, and with the Exchange team and with an Office Shared team to address these problems. And so we wanted to go and actually modernize our authentication. And here I'm on stage, and I'm actually able to go and tell you that by the end of this calendar year, we want to go and offer multi-factor authentication in Office 365 to you. Lower support. We run the service, and you have support folks within your organization, and supporting Outlook can be expensive. For you, it's expensive. For us, it's expensive. So we have a mutual interest to lower the support cost. And we do a ton of work. A lot of it revolves around connectivity, because what we find out, and you're very well aware of that, is like, if the connectivity, for some reason, goes down, people call because they think something is wrong on their local machine, but often it's something else. But we are fully aware of that, so we are working on connectivity. Related to problems, and we're making improvements on a monthly basis. One of the areas is actually account configuration, so I'm also sharing a little bit of what's still in flight in Redmond, the feature crews are working on. So you're aware that Outlook stores account configuration information in profiles and MAPI profiles. We're actually changing that architecture right now, and we're using the auto-discover response that we get from Exchange as the single source of truth. So like the goal is that we get the auto-discover response, we cache it, and we're no longer go and parse it out and end up in situation of where some of the information that we have stored and remember from previous responses and the stuff that Exchange actually tells us how to be configured are out of sync. So we're actually going to use auto-discover response as the single source of truth for that. And one related issue that comes up is like sometimes when you make a change in auto-discover, the famous message comes up is your administration or Exchange admin or something like that is called, has made a change, please restart your Outlook. One scenario that came up or is coming up is when you do the protocol switch from RPC to our new MAPI over HTTP protocol. That protocol switch will no longer have that prompt. What we did is we eradicated that prompt because We did a little bit the math, and we figured out that two things. Number one is that within a couple of days, all the users eventually restart their Outlook or their machine. So if you look over the course of a week or so, you will have like 99% or a huge percentage of our users that will run that protocol anyway. The second thing is our test team validated that we can actually run in a hybrid context, and some of the connections are still the good old RPC ones, while the new ones have already switched. So we validated that that scenario works. We were able to remove that prompt, and that's another source for some customers to get dissatisfied. Usually they're not confused, they're just annoyed because the prompt comes up in the middle of their workflow. So like, oh, I was just about to send this mail, darn it, right? Don't disrupt me. So this disruption is also gone now. Another little thing along these lines is the sync errors that show up in the sync error folder. They tend to be very verbose, and users went into that, and they looked at them, and it couldn't make sense out of it, and support couldn't make sense out of it. So we actually cleaned up a lot of these errors, and right now we're trying to make them really way more actionable. So if somebody in your support and our support gets a call that these errors are actually helped to debug the issue and they're not actually making our users anxious unnecessarily. So we've cleaned that up. So here, let me show you a little bit the characteristic of MAPI over HTTP versus RPC. RPC is on the left and MAPI over HTTP is on the right. What this measures is time to connect. This is part of the KPI that I mentioned before. You open up your laptop, you want your mail first. The reason why this goes up and down and has more variance, a little bit more, is the target audience for MAPI over HTTP was much smaller compared to that. But as you can see on the right graph, and this is already stale, it's a couple months old, the right graph shows more dark green, which means that it took Outlook much less time to connect compared to RPC. So that's just one of the reasons why you want to consider. It's just people will get mail faster using the new protocol. There's a session right after this one in Ballroom F given by Rafik and Venkat and another expert from France that will walk you through Outlook connectivity and do a deep dive into the new protocol. So I know that a lot of you are familiar with it already. If you want to know more about it, there's a session just right after this. Speaking of other sessions, there's also one at 1 p.m. that will introduce multi-factor authentication. Franklin is here in the audience, and Eric will go and conduct that session, and they will do a deep dive in multi-factor authentication. Just a one-minute summary of what MFA is what are factors of authentication? It's something you know, like it could be your password, something you have, it could be your phone, and something you are. That's sort of the scariest one, right? It's your retina, it's your fingerprint. So like these are the kinds of factors of authentication that you can do. Like it doesn't have to be a combination of all three, so you can choose it. One of the things we've done, we actually no longer have authentication code in Outlook when we run against Exchange. We have now Office libraries that are shared. So one of the benefits that gives us is single sign-on scenario. So you can go and sign into Link or Word or Outlook, whatever you do first, and all the other apps benefit from being already authenticated against cloud endpoints. So that's one of the big benefits from a user point of view. And obviously, it makes the connection and authentication to a cloud endpoint way more secure than what we currently offer. With that, we transition to fit for new generation of devices. Ronak is going to give you a summary of that. I already touched on all these points of what the new hardware is, so I think it's better just go and do a demo and walk you through all the things that we've done in Outlook 2013 and beyond on that front. But before I do that, let me also announce, and I think you're already aware of it, last summer, we have actually included the new Outlook 2013 RT build in Windows Blue, RT version. That basically means if you go and into a store and you buy a Surface RT device, it now comes with Outlook. So we actually have worked on an Outlook RT version, and it's now included in the Windows RT SKU. With that, I give it back to you, Ronak.
Thank you, Peter. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the fit for modern devices pillar that we have. And I'm going to start by saying Outlook was built in a world where the mouse was the primary mode of input, but we've improved Outlook 2013 to support touch as the primary source of input, so your finger. And just a quick poll, how many people are aware that there exists a touch mode in Outlook? Oh, that's still pretty good, but everyone. So I'll start by by saying, okay, you've seen Outlook. This is what we call in standard mouse mode. I'm going to go ahead and put it into touch mode. And this is really conducive to using your fingers as input. So I'm going to go to the top right here, and you see a mouse mode that's selected, and I'm going to go ahead and switch it over to touch. And you can see right away the UI gets a little bit more spaced out. The touch targets become a little bit more conducive to using your finger. And we have on the right-hand side, you might have seen what we're calling the action bar. And you can see that the device, I got a Surface Pro right here. And I'm gonna, since I can't really hold up the device, they told me not to do that, I'm going to go ahead and show you. I would hold the device with both my hands. And we wanted to provide something that allows you to triage your email on the go quicker than you could previously, or when a mouse isn't, when you don't have a mouse on you. So you can see the action bar here. We have the most used commands, quickly one tap access, so that you can help triage your email. So I'm going to go ahead and show you how it works. I'm going to go and delete this email from Peter saying we need to talk because, you know, I don't really want to talk to him right now. I can go ahead and flag an email. I can mark it as read, unread. And you can see it's really in access to your thumb, and it's the most heavily used command, so we think we'll use it a lot, and we really think it's going to help improve your workflows in the morning when you're walking to meetings or when you're walking from the bus to the office, et cetera. So I'm going to take a step back, and I'm going to say, okay, I want to use this this action bar to continue my workflow and reply to an email. What else do you guys do in Outlook to help me out? So I'm going to go ahead, and I'll respond to an important meeting. Email. So I'm going to go ahead from the action bar, just like that. I'm going to hit reply. Try not to use a reply all too much. And I'm going to type a short response. Sorry, I can't make this. I have better things to do. And so this is not something I would normally send my boss, but for the sake of Mac, I'm going to go ahead and type this in. I'm going to say, I want to really underscore my point that I have better things to do than sit in a meeting with Peter. So I'm going to go ahead and highlight this, and I'm going to bring up I'm going to switch into mouse mode again. I'm going to bring up the ribbon. And you're going to see, I'm going to drop down the font picker here. I want to turn it red, right? And you can see this is quite a small dialog box, or quite a small drop down that's come down. And if I try and pick a finger or pick a color with my finger, I'll probably miss the one that I want. I'll be in public, so I'll have to close one of my eyes and try and zero in on a color. So I'm going to go ahead and switch into touch mode and show you something that we've done here that's awesome. I'm going to go ahead and use my finger to bring up a nice, big, beautiful color picker. Now I'm not going to be in public with one eye closed trying to zero in on red. I'm going to go ahead and make it red and then go ahead and single tap send that off to Peter. So this is kind of the small refinements that we've made to Outlook 2013 to bring the power of Outlook to these small devices and when your finger is your primary mode of input. Yeah. You guys like that? Well, I got more. I have more. So I'm going to switch over to the calendar module. Sometimes the calendar module looks a little sparse, but you can see I'm quite busy this week. And I'm going to go ahead and show you some of the gesture support that we've done right on the calendar surface to make it easy to navigate between your days, your months, and your weeks. So again, you can see I'm going to slowly gesture to the right, to the left. My next couple weeks look a little light. I'm going to go back. And you can see that we added gesture support to allow you to navigate between your months and weeks, but we didn't stop there, right? Of course not. We went ahead and said you can pinch and zoom into a specific day, right? I want to get my day's look at a glance, so that's really cool. Here, I'll do that again because I really like that animation. Whoa, right? And then, of course, we give you the ability to pinch and zoom out to get a big picture view. So I'm going to go ahead and slowly pinch and zoom out. Look at that. I can see my month at a glance. So these are just some of the highlights that we've made to really highlight the fact that we know these devices are becoming more prevalent in the marketplace, right? And we know you're going to be using your finger to interact with these devices on the go. And we're not going to stop there, right? As Peter mentioned, we're going to continue to push this as a pillar of investment in the future, and lots of goodness to come there. So I'm going to quickly switch gears now and talk about something else that Peter mentioned, and that's that these devices tend to have smaller hard drives or smaller storage spaces. And we really, really wanted to be smart by default and not sync down all your mail and not bog down the hard drive with email. So we introduced what we're calling the sync slider. And I'm going to go ahead and bring up the dialog box. I'm going to go hit file, right? I'm going to go hit count settings, right? Everyone should be aware of this. And I'm going to hit the change button here. And we're going to stop. We're going to pause. We're going to celebrate this dialog box as we tend to do at Microsoft. And I'm gonna ask you to look down at the sync slider, and you'll see it says use Exchange Cache Mode. Pro tip: use Exchange cache mode as much as you can. And we've auto sunk down 3 months of mail. And you can be confident that we've done something smart. We've gathered the data. Dependent on your hardware size, we've set a smart default to 3 months, but true to form to Outlook, we've given you the full control, and you can actually do whatever you want. You can go ahead and say, you know what, I'm only going to use my device for email, and go ahead and sync down 24 months of email. But you should be confident that we've chosen the smart default. We've got the usage data back. We know that when you're on small hard drives, you probably don't want more than 3 months. So giving you the full power to customize it, as we always do, but went ahead and you can be confident that we've given you a smart default right out of the box. And right before I give it back to Peter, something that I like to do to prove kind of that I am actually a true geek is bring up one of my favorite dialog boxes in Outlook. It's called the connection status dialog. And I know everyone in this audience has seen this at some point. So I'm going to go ahead and bring it up. Just to kind of show you, I want to go ahead and show you. So let's celebrate the Outlook connection status. I think any demo that I bring this dialog box in is going well, usually. And I'm going to go ahead and ask you to look at the protocol right here. And you can see it's the new HTTP, no more RPC over HTTP. Just to prove that we really believe in this, and all the live demos that I'm doing today are using the new MAPI HTTP protocol. So with that, my mission has been accomplished. I showed the connection status dialog. And back to Peter for some more theory.
Thank you, Ronak. So let's transition into the third investment bucket, which is advanced enterprise value. There's a lot that we've done in Outlook 2013. In Outlook 2013, as you've seen, we actually stressed the demos for a lot of things that we've done since Outlook 2013 shipped. Ronak did some demos of stuff that exists in Outlook 2013. So he will show us a few more things around people, apps, and peaks. But let me walk you through other things that we've done. Data loss prevention, you're all familiar with that, I'm sure. We shipped in Outlook 2013. We have Outlook.com support out of box. We use EAS. It's a protocol that we use to connect to Outlook.com. We still use MAPI to connect to Exchange. So EAS is not a protocol that we are supporting to run against Exchange, but it's the protocol that we now use to sync Outlook.com. We've done a ton of work in IMAP, in Outlook 2013 RTM, and even beyond to make it more standards compliant, especially if, when running against Gmail. We spell check the subject line more than a decade later. We finally do that. We have inline replies, and you saw Ronak do the demos. It's super handy, especially on small devices. Creates a very flat inline experience, the inline replies. We see a lot of users actually use it. We get a lot of usage data out of that. We have weather in the calendar. We've done a bunch of work together with Exchange to support their brick architecture. We support anonymous auth when we run against Exchange. And so on, the list goes on. And so if I want to go with David, the geeky examples that Ronak was making with the connection status dialogue, one of the things that we've also eradicated from Outlook is that sometimes you got the dialogue that Outlook needs to fix up your PSD, some corruption happened. You cannot get to that dialogue anymore in Outlook 2013. We do all of that behind the scenes. We're fixing things up. We make things more resilient. So that dialogue is gone as well. Little things, but all things that, glad you like that. Little things, little annoyances to remove from the product. Let me talk about two more things. Number one is accessibility. Within your org, you'll probably often get questions asked by your management and potentially even employees, are we accessibility compliant? Is Office okay with that? Is Office offering us the support that we are required? We've done a lot of work in Office 2013 and even beyond, especially around communication scenarios to deliver an accessible product to you. There's actually a link in this deck that to pointer to our accessibility material that's online. So please check that out, and it gives you more information. And then the third and last one is there's a lot more in store for Desktop Outlook 16. Just stay tuned. We are having a technical preview program that will start later this year. A lot of you are probably in the Exchange tab. You're part of that preview program. So just stay tuned. We're not yet demoing a lot of the Outlook 16 stuff, But it's coming your way. Just connect with us through the technical preview program, and we will go and deliver the bits to you guys as early as we will deliver it to public or NDA audiences. With that, I give it back to Ronak for the last round of demos.
All right. And I actually have a live code of Outlook 16 running on this device. And maybe we can reward some of these people for waking up nice and early and give the first ever sneak peek into Outlook 16. So maybe, do people like that? Okay.
You need more applause if you need to demo Outlook 16.
Okay. And again, no, I'm just kidding. So we'll leave that to the end. We'll say time permitting in case, because my boss is here, right? And we weren't supposed to do this. So I'm just kidding, we will. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about some of the investments that we're continuing to make, just as well as some of the new things that we're introducing into 2013 to help improve your workflows. And one of them, for example, is we still believe that people are at the center of your communications, right? And you kind of, when you want to communicate with someone, you think people first. So you can see here the person card, which is not new, but we've given it a facelift. It's modern, it's beautiful, it connects to your IM, you can do video chat, you can call them, you can send an email, just like you could before, but it's modern. So we continue to reinvest in this space, and we will continue to do so. And then we've also made some small improvements. We're listening to customer feedback consistently and constantly, and we've introduced features that will improve your workflow even under the covers. So I'm going to go ahead and give you a quick example of something we know that that you guys really like. One of the features is notes on the person card. So I'm going to go ahead and hit the add button. I'm going to add a few notes. I'm going to say, Peter really likes the outdoors. So I'm going to hit save, and as this refreshes the person card, now anytime I pull up Peter, even in 6 months or a year, I'm going to know that he likes the outdoors. I can get it at a glance. These are some things that I might forget, but now that I know, when I start a new workflow in the future, I'll be able to include that in, maybe entice him to come over to Microsoft or something like that and talk. So here you go. I have the notes, and I can close the person card. So that's really awesome. And then, so that's something that we've done that reinvests in the people space. And I'm going to show you something that we've done that's a little bit new, but we think it's great. So we've looked at the data. We know that people live in mail, right? I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that. And we know you get your work done by reading email, replying to email, and so forth. And so what we wanted to do was minimize the amount of time you switch contacts, right? We want to keep you in mail as much as possible when appropriate, but also give you peripheral awareness into what's happening around you. So I'm going to go ahead and take my mouse. I hope you can see it. I'm going to hover over the calendar, Pete. And this is what we're calling the peak. You see me use that word. So here you go. You can stay within mail, get your day's view at a glance, and you can go ahead and hover over the people peak as well, and you can get the people that you've pinned and favorited. I'm going to go ahead and call out something that's also really cool. So previously, we had this notion of search your contacts, right? Search your directory. And with 2013, we've brought them together finally. Right, just like Peter said, with the spell check taking over a decade. We've brought them together, and now I can search anyone in my organization or my contact list and have them show up. And I can go ahead and open the person card if I want. And true to my story, pull up the notes if I want to communicate with this person. So that's something that we've really done. We really like. We've deduped the people search. We know that people also like to search your contacts, but just as much you want to search the directory in your organization. So we made it really easy to find the people that you want to communicate with, and then once you do, give you a launch point to start communicating with them easier. So I'm going to take a step back and kind of talk a little bit about our extensibility. I'm going to go and pull up an email here from Peter, a secret meeting. He likes to have secret meetings a lot, and I really like them personally. So here we have an email, and Peter said, okay, this week's secret meeting is going to take place at this address. He gives me an address. Sometimes it's longitude and latitude. But this time he's giving me an address. And if you see right here above the email, we have a little gray bar. Right? And we're calling that the web extensions. And you can see that Bing Maps has already noticed or recognized that there's an address in the email and gone ahead and given me the option to open Bing Maps. And before I click on that, I'm going to take a step back and say, again, context switching is detrimental to productivity, right? So what's my normal workflow here? I get an address, I take out my phone, I type it in, I go, okay, now this is where I have to go. And then maybe I use the phone to continue on. So we want to keep you in Outlook, keep you from getting distracted and get your work done. So I'm going to go ahead and click on Bing Maps. And it's going to say, oh, look, I think we found an address. We have some DPI issues now that we can't fix, but the point is still here. This is fully extensible. You can build your own, and you can see for the Bing Maps one, it's recognized that I have a meeting, and I can even go interact with it. And I don't have to leave Outlook in any way. I can say, oh, right, okay, this week's meeting, just like last week, is in the middle of a forest. that's how all these secret meetings tend to go. and I can go, okay, at a glance. I work in building 4 here often, and I can say, okay, it's across the street in the standard secret meeting place. And I didn't have to leave Outlook. I don't have to go take out my phone. I don't have to change workflows. I go single tap. I can see where I need to be really, really quickly. And I hope that's something that excites you, right? Giving you the opportunity to build powerful tools right into Outlook. We have an office store, and I'm excited to think that you guys will build stuff that I can use to help my workflows every morning when I read my mail. That's something that I really like in Outlook, and I hope you guys will embrace too and use in the future. Thank you.
Do you want to show them 16?
Yeah. I kind of breezed down. Let's show you guys some 16 here. And if I don't come back to Mech next year, it's because I was fired.
Yeah, so Ronak is running a recent dog food build of 16. It's probably about, a week old or something like that?
Yeah, it's about a week old. It's live code. I know a bunch of demos that I've seen have gone not so smoothly, so let's hope that this does. Okay, so I'm going to switch over. Everyone can see. Okay, so here we have Outlook, and everyone can see. It's awesome. So we have standard Outlook running. We have this two-pane layout on a small device. And if you have one of your Dell Venue Pros, you might notice that Outlook previously isn't that great at dealing with a bunch of different rotations. And so we made a small improvement. We realized that this is going to be a device that you guys get work done on. So I'm going to go ahead and tilt it into portrait mode. Okay, and I'm going to come back. I'm going to stop right here for a second. I'm going to say it took the message that you're selected on. And in this case, it's a long thread. And it's given you a full pane reading experience. So you can sit down with your cup of coffee in the morning, catch up on all the developer emails that sent saying stuff has been broken last night, and not worry about having such a small amount of space to read. Of course, just like you would imagine, we give you an opportunity to go back and forth on these between the message list and the reading pane. So here's some small tweaks that we're making to Outlook to really make it powerful and bring the richness and the capability of Outlook onto these small devices. So I think that's all I'm allowed to show you. And in case they record it, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over, and then I'm going to give it back to Peter to talk about some best practices.
Thank you, Ronak.
Thank you.
Big Ed, that concludes our session, our demos. Yeah, apps for Outlook. I will talk a little bit more about that. You can find a lot more information on dev.office.com, and here's a picture of the App Store that's out there, and I know that you're aware of that, and you can also have corporate apps that are showing up in your own store for your own employees, line of business apps that integrate into Office and Outlook. So let me completely switch gear. Best practices for running Outlook. So what we did before the session is we actually walked the hallways in building 30 and we picked people's brains and said, like, hey, we can now talk to the folks that are deploying Outlook and running Exchange and partnering with customers and all of that. The Microsoft Exchange Conference, what do you guys want them to know about Outlook? Because often we get requests from customers and they're using features in a way and it's like, oh gosh, I wish they wouldn't have done that. So here are some things from Building 30 that we wanted to go and share with you. First and foremost, Office 365 is our focus, right? Like, you should have no doubt about that. Like it's like the modern authentication, the MFA stuff that we've done, the connectivity improvements, the new protocol, and I can go on and on and on. We're spending a ton of time making Outlook an awesome client. And why is Office 365 something that's interesting for you? It is really the fastest pace of innovation. And if you go and ask your information workers in your organization, is like what they're used to. We are in the middle of a big revolution in the IT industry, in the overall computer industry. Technology is moving at a rapid pace right now. People are expecting when they go into app stores with their phone and with their other devices. They're expecting innovation to show up very, very quickly on a daily basis, right? And the same, like we are looking at that, and we know that we're part of that, and we want Office to move faster as well. And Office 365 is really the place where you can get the innovation the fastest. We're moving at a tremendous speed right now on the service side, and we're also on the client side to deliver that innovation. And the other thing is also like we're doing the integration for you. Like Link, SharePoint, and Exchange, and the Office clients are super tightly integrated when they run against Office 365. We can create a lot of features that are cross-workload, and you saw the Exchange folks demo a whole bunch of them in the context of groups and attachments, right, of how to become seamless. Yes, everything will be cloud-first, and we are working on delivering it on-prem. If you want it first, it's where we deliver it first. It's in the cloud. And one of the scenarios is like SharePoint works very hard on that is external users, collaboration with external users. You want to go and make sure that there's a place where documents are, that they're locked down, you have control over who has access to that, like very tightly integrated into Office 365 as well. So what does that mean? So mailbox in the cloud, and there's sometimes a little bit of confusion. It also means an Office 365 subscription, right? Like the mailbox in the cloud, I think that's the obvious one, and I'm pretty sure that all of you here know what the distinction is, but often we have to explain customers there's two sides of Office 365. One is the thing that we run in the cloud, the services. The other thing is actually the client. And the click to run also comes in two different flavors. You can have it perpetual, you can have it as a subscription. And what we're working on is that if you get that click to run subscription, we're actually delivering innovation on a much faster pace. We're accelerating that, but the goal is that we have quarterly, monthly features show up to the subscription customers much faster than the 2-year release cycle that they're used to from the shrink wrapped Office releases. So let me transition to something else. Cache Exchange is your friend. It's the only mode that you want to run against Office 365 mailboxes. I know that there was some talk about, like, yeah, what about data that's behind the machines and all of that? And we should go, please come to the experts booth this afternoon, and we should talk about that. But it's really the mode that you want to run. It's the strategic mode that we're investing in on the Outlook side. It's the mode that shields the customers away from the flakiness of the network. Ronek was already talking about the sync slider in the context of devices that have small storage. Another scenario is also large mailboxes. Like Exchange has shipped 50 gigabyte in the mailboxes. You do not want to sync 50 gigabyte of content into an OSD file. So that there's no absolute threshold, but at 25 gigs, stop, right? Like don't go with OSDs beyond 25 gigs, right? Even recommend to be lower, but definitely don't go and say like open up 50 gig mailboxes and don't think about actually having sync sliders in place to go and make sure that not all the data is replicated down. Offline address book goes with cached exchange. You want to have the offline address book. It ensures that Outlook doesn't have to talk to the Active Directory. It can satisfy a lot of directory requests by getting the data out of the offline address book. And it's repetitive, I know, but I want to make sure is like online mode is not a great mode for high latency environments. It's not a mode that you want to run. Stay current. 20 to 30 hotfixes. This is the number internally. We triage a lot more hotfixes, but 20 to 30 we accept across all supported versions of Outlook every single month. We accept and we fix. There are a lot of hotfixes that we fix that just accrue value to all of you here in the room. So if you stay current, you get the benefit of all these fixes that we're doing. We are also proactive. We repetitively talk to customers, and we're picking up top asks, and we're fixing the products. We would like to only fix the latest version. We know the reality. We're not there yet. Like, there's Outlook 2007 still out there, despite the fact that support has ended. But 2010 and 2013, we're not innovating in 2010. We're modulo the MAPI over HTTP, but we're continuing to deliver fixes for both of the products. These fixes are delivered through both channels as cumulative updates and public updates for the MSI deployments, and click to run. That's even easier, right? Through the CDN content delivery networks, you get a subtle prompt. There's a new version of Office. The user says yes, and off they go. They run the latest version. What are other benefits that click-to-run subscription have? We've changed the licensing. It's now per user, no longer per machine. What that means is they can go and use it on whatever machine that they have across different platforms. You heard us announce Office for iOS a few days ago, so that's another benefit. This is I know that a lot of you have non-Windows devices in your organization. One of the benefits that click-to-run subscription give you is that it provides you with a license for these other platforms as well. Keep Outlook responsive. That's a little bit a more tricky one. So one of the things we're doing on a regular basis internally, we look at, are you all familiar with Watson, like the crashes and all of that? You probably are. So we are actually regularly looking at the Watson, the top crashes. It's really a great system because it gives us statistically relevant feedback from all the users out there. And if you want to go and increase the mean time to failure, then we actually need to go and fix the top crashes. And we're doing that on a regular basis. We actually just had, as a month ago, hit an all-time low of crashes. So the session length has never been as long as before, not being impacted by crashes. And so we have a lot of work going on across, especially Outlook 2013, to go and make sure that we ship a super stable version of Outlook. We can only fix what we own. We cannot fix the crashes that are in add-ins. And so be very cautious when you go and deploy those add-ins. The top three crashes that remain in Outlook are now related to add-ins of code that we don't own. And we actually work with these ISVs, and it's, we're not blaming anybody on that. It is very, very difficult to write great code, and it's very, very difficult to write stable code that integrates into Outlook and write it in a way that is performant. We do understand that, and there are a lot of great developers out there that write really, really great add-ins, but just to say, what we learn is we have to follow up with them and work with them and educate them on the issues that they have to make sure that everybody that runs these add-ins doesn't get impacted. Because we do understand at the end it's Outlook that crashes, right? It's not the add-in that crashes, right? From a user perspective, it is the product. It's the Outlook product. And so we have a huge interest in that. So one of the things you can do is rely on well-written ones and keep the numbers small, especially the .NET ones. The marshalling between the .NET and native code has a price tag associated with it. Rules, server-side rules. They run async. They run on the server when you receive and send mail. They have no performance impact whatsoever on the client. Not so much true for client-side rules. Try to avoid client-side rules. I think by now we have virtually all the rules that we've introduced. Modulo, the ones that will bring up UI, are actually server-side rules, so there should actually be not a lot of reasons for not exclusively relying on them. Number of mailboxes, that's another constraining factor. We are continuing to do work in Outlook to go and make us more performant. We are aware that if you go and have a lot of mailboxes in your Mappy profile, that just has a perf impact. When we boot, we walk the different hierarchies, and it goes and slows down Outlook. That's just the reality. We will do more work down the road, but it's something, if you can go and ensure that the number of mailboxes is kept in a minimum, will help. So there's a lot more content online. I will actually walk you through all these articles in the next... Just kidding. These are the TechNet articles. There's a huge spectrum of stuff that's out there, and it's in your slide. Please click on these links. There's a ton of interesting content for running cached exchange, to attachment security settings, to multiple exchange accounts, all kinds of stuff that you can catch up on. We also added a few more pointers here. The first one is, personally, I think it's a really interesting one. Because I know that enterprises are really relying on MSI installs primarily. This one is a great walkthrough in the Garage series to compare against MSI and click-to-run technology, what the attributes of each of the technologies are. The second one is the accessibility article I already mentioned a little bit earlier. And then the next three articles, a little bit older. The first one you're probably already aware of is calendar. Calendaring is hard. It's a very complicated features. With delegate scenarios and free busy and all of that, recurrences and exception to recurrences. There's an article that the Outlook team wrote a while ago that provides guidance for how you can make calendar as reliable as possible in your organization. The next two are actually really great articles for your organization if you have training courses for folks that want to go and get the most out of Outlook. They talk about how you can use categories and conditional formatting and rules and all the power of Outlook and optimize your email workflows to the email triage workflows to catch up on email and to make sure when an email comes in, it has the right colors associated if it's from your boss and stuff like that. It's a little bit dated. It's probably like 2 or 3 years old, but it's still valid. It still applies. All these functionality still exists in Outlook. It's a great training material for internal training. With that, we're starting the Q&A, but before we do that, I hoped that we got the message across that we're delivering innovation at a much faster pace. We have a lot of partnership with Exchange. I know that a lot of questions came up regarding desktop Outlook. Are we going to go and care about enterprise social? Will we go and work with Exchange on that? The cloud attachments, really great feature. We love it. It's great if attachments are no longer in people's mailboxes. And search capabilities, like I liked a lot. I was in this session yesterday afternoon. Like there's a lot of query suggestions for like when you run searches. We are just one building away from Exchange. Exchange is in building 32, we're in building 30. And there's a lot of partnerships that are going on. There's a lot of code that we've already written. We're not yet ready to show it to you, but believe us, we're innovating at an unprecedented fast pace. With that, I open up the microphones. Please come to one of the microphones and ask us questions. Thank you. And please fill out the speaker evaluation forms.
My name is Andrew. I have a couple of questions. Because you haven't mentioned the clutter feature that's been mentioned here, are you not the owner of at least of part of it? Is it the Exchange team or your team?
The mailbox intelligence team in Exchange is spearheading that effort because a lot of the logic is happening actually on Exchange, all the heuristics to determine that. And that's actually one of the features that we're working with Exchange on. So figure out like how we can go and come up with a great experience for how users in Outlook can go and benefit from that functionality.
Okay. So do you know approximate time frame where that can happen?
No, not yet. And it's actually really hard to answer in time frames because we're going to go and have, there's a major release of 16, and then we'll have quarterly innovation that will ship. We'll probably do the same thing. I'm pretty sure that we'll have it in cloud first. So no, at the moment, I can't yet answer.
Because my boss that's present here actually asked me to cut his mail count by half because he's getting too much email. But anyway, so that would be a great feature, like when it happens.
Yeah.
And another question is, can we have a little, well, I know it's Office in general, not just Outlook, but a little darker themes than the so-called dark gray.
Well, there actually, it's timely input. We are working, we have heard it loud and clear that the flat white is not cutting it, and we have, in Office 2013, a new dark theme. It's back.
Well, dark gray is not dark. but anyway, okay.
No, there is a new theme.
Oh, is it?
That we are introducing, and stay tuned for more about that. Get part of the technical preview. We're working on themes overall in Office. So it's not in 2013. So it's work that we're doing for 16. So we are aware of it. We heard the feedback, and stay tuned. Technical preview, we'll have that. We'll give you a glimpse at that.
Okay, thank you.
So you mentioned it several times that you're going to accelerate feature additions, but I guess it hasn't been lost on me that all the demos we've seen of new features in Exchange have all been done through OWA. Do you think you're going to be able to get to the same cadence of feature releases, or are we going to have to start preparing to have more of our users get more familiar with OWA to take advantage of these features quickly?
It's an excellent question. So I think the way that I would answer is sort of twofold. Number one is, as I said before, is like when we go and innovate, we don't need to innovate with all the dozens of millions or actually hundreds of millions of Outlook users across all the versions. It's not required. We can innovate in a much smaller pool, and we can also use OWA as a way that we innovate. Like that's one of the things that Exchange is doing. We're spearheading a lot of stuff with OWA. We gather the feedback, and by the time we can pick up We can pick the feed functionality up in Desktop Outlook. It is already at a much more mature state, so we can go and deliver it to the customers. And yes, we are accelerating. The focus of the last year has been more on infrastructure, connectivity, and all of that. And we have switched gears right now. We're working with them on a lot of the stuff. So no, the answer should be no, we do not want to go and retrain users and get them into OWA. And if people are familiar with Desktop Outlook, they love Desktop Outlook, that's the app that they should use to take advantage of the new functionality as well.
Mm-hmm. Another question. Is there a reason why Outlook wasn't part of the iPad Office suite?
Well, it's another great question. I think the way that you look at it is that the biggest demand right now is actually for Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. It's for the productivity apps. If you look at the stats for how the usage patterns are on the cross-platform, because they all have inbox apps, that's actually not the number one ask that you will hear from them. The number one ask is like, I have a Word document, I want to go and offer that, I have an Excel spreadsheet and all of that. So that's just like from a market perspective, is that's how we responded to it, because that's really what customers wanted the most.
Okay. Well, I think Outlook is certainly a popular app. But last question.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, that's good.
last question was, you may have mentioned it, but I missed it. Some of the new touch features you demonstrated, is that coming in a cumulative update soon, or is that in part of 16?
So the compact header that I showed.
No, the touch, the
pinch. Oh, that should be in 2013.
Well, except the last demo, that's 16. So there's currently there's no plan for the portrait landscape to be ported. We may change our opinion a little bit later, but right now that's targeted for 16.
And everything else I demoed, it should be, if you have SP1, you'll have the compact header, and then everything else is built in.
Oh, okay, thanks.
No problem.
Couple of questions. Is there any possibility to have the keyboard automatically pop up in Outlook like it does on Metro apps? That's the most annoying thing, is you have all the touch feature for navigating, but then you want to do a quick reply and you have to fumble to go get the...
Yeah, that's actually great feedback. That's something we're working closely with Windows on to try and figure out. They have a story on when it should come up and when it shouldn't, but that's something that I'm actually noticing personally that's starting to become a problem. So that's actually good feedback, and we are working with the teams to see what we can do and make it easier, because I agree, going down to the taskbar to get the keyboard and then dismissing it is probably not the best user experience, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And then with the Mappy HTTP, is it... the full Mappy API and a developer experience doesn't change, or is it something, or is there some things that are cut out a little bit?
No, it should be fully opaque to you. You should know. If you do Mappy level integration, you shouldn't see anything, unless you would interop in any way with the RPC directly. But if you go and integrate into Outlook, you shouldn't see any difference between the new protocol and the previous protocol.
And same with extended Mappy.
Yep.
You won't notice.
Same thing.
And then. I think I heard right, Mappy HTTP and RPC, it will just kind of be two layers that run together?
No, you should probably go to the other session that starts right now. They'll go and give you a deep dive. It's actually quite sophisticated, because you can go and run in a hybrid mode and you have multiple mailboxes. Not all the mailboxes might have been upgraded at the same time. So we fully have to support running against our RPC against the mailbox of a server that hasn't been upgraded and having another connection with already HTTP.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You mentioned that there was changes to the profile creation code, so that it used, was it Exchange Active Sync or something to...
Other Discover work, you mean?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that there was changes to the profile creation so that you got your information, or you'd make sure that your information was up to date from some other source. I can't remember.
Auto-discover. What I tried to explain was the account configuration is stored in Outlook in a Mappy profile. And when we get information back from Exchange regarding how should we authenticate against the server, what is the server endpoints, what protocol should we use, so far we have just basically parsed that information and we scattered the information into or stored it as individual properties. And at times, these things could get out of sync. So what Exchange wanted Outlook to do and what Outlook believed it should do was not the same thing. The change that is in flight right now, and it's not yet available, but we're working on it, is that we are actually using the auto discover response from Exchange as the single source of truth. So we, like, repetitively, when Outlook runs into some failure conditions, we go back to Exchange and say, like, tell me about the configuration. And then we go and get that information, and we cache it on the client side. And then if we need to know of, like, what kind of authentication we use this single source of truth. So there's no more opportunity for the information that we stored and what Exchange told us to be out of sync. So it's always the information we get from Exchange that we will trust.
So what I was wondering was, if you have a add-in that creates new profiles, does that have a, will that have a, if you programmatically create profiles, will that have any effect?
It should actually not, because when you programmatically create the profile, the act of configuring Outlook to run against Exchange always involves us asking Exchange for the auto discover response. So the stuff that we're changing should be like levels below the actual add-in, because we ask like, we have your SMTP address and your password, and then we do a very sophisticated probe of figuring out, is it an Exchange mailbox, is it Gmail, is it whatever.
So not going to override settings that we...
You shouldn't see, the add-in shouldn't see that, like, and I don't think that anybody, like, unless the add-in goes and starts messing around with MAPI properties directly in the profile.
I'm just going to make up some scenario. You're trying to force half your users to a different front end or something like that, by, like, that would get overwritten, because we'd go ask Exchange, like, hey, where should we go to talk to you? And Exchange will tell us. But from a, like, settings not related to connectivity or anything, no, that won't change.
And these types of questions are really great. We have the experts unplugged at 2:45.
What time? Stuff we can talk. Okay, I think that's the last. Two more questions.
Okay.
No, there's a gentleman behind you.
Okay. I'm going to both sessions, so maybe you can elaborate later on. But I'm just wondering, do you guys look backwards too? I mean, we got all these great new features, people panels, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. I've been teaching Exchange and Outlook for almost 20 years now. And my two top questions are still, why do shared mailboxes not work the way I expect? And the other one is, why can I not transfer my meeting request to someone else? I get that question almost daily. I mean, these are features that are available in Notes and GroupWise and has been for like 15 years. So while it's very exciting to hear all the new stuff, sometimes it's great if you can, you know, hold it and say, can I have my auto signature in out of office? Little things that almost every user would find. These are very simple things to do. Oh, maybe they are. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But do you go that path, or are you strictly going?
We always try to go and address issues like that you mentioned. You should actually just send us your list. We don't make any commitments, but we're always super curious about that. Mm-hmm. The ones that you mentioned, we just didn't get to yet, right? So, but please do share. Please do share these lists with us. We're trying to go, you saw it, a lot of little things that we've done over the releases. We're trying to go and always have a budget to address those. We understand that those are important for you guys.
If it's a customer pain point, then it's something that we want to know about, because we want to try and address it if we can, right?
I know, I'm from Europe, and I think we have different needs than you guys do. Our users apparently are completely morons and do things in strange ways. I don't know. But I guarantee you, I have 95% of all users are asking me the exact same questions and have done for 15 years now.
Yep.
It's good feedback.
Okay. Thanks.
Great job with the 2013 client, by the way. Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Can you talk about when you're going to incorporate some of these features in the Mac client?
No, I can't comment on I can't comment on that. We actually have a sister team that is in California that works on the Mac client, so it's not done out of our own team. And I'm actually honestly not prepared to give you the timeline for when which functionality will show up in the Mac client. If you're curious about that, also touch base. I'm happy to get you in contact with our friends in the Bay Area.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Please fill out the speaker evaluations and come to the other sessions if you have any questions. Thank you.